It's entirely possible that a young person today might hear the term early music and think it's about what people listened to before hip-hop, or at the extreme, before Elvis. We're going way before Elvis in this hour. The Ashland-based organization Musica Matrix is about early music in the sense of music from Shakespeare's time and earlier to the medieval age and beyond. The group performs a trio concert Saturday evening at the Ashland Springs Hotel, and the trio members join us in the studio. Pat O'Scannell is the founder of Musica Matrix. Good to see you back in the studio once again, Pat.
Thank you.
Actually, in the studio, this studio for the first time.
I know. It's so great.
Good to have you here. Shira Kamen, thank you so much for joining us. Good to see you in the studio. And Lauren Pomerantz, welcome as well. So, Pat and Lauren, you are both the Rogue Valley folks, is that right?
Yeah,
yes.
I've been here for 3 years. I didn't start here, but yeah.
Mm-hmm. I've been here 6 years.
Long time.
Okay, so Shira, where did you come from?
I came up from the Bay Area, and I lived here to work at the festival in 1981 and 82.
Which,
if I can even remember the right dates.
Well, which raises the question. I get the sense, certainly from the last time we talked and from the things I read along the way, that it seems like everybody in early music knows everybody else. Is that fair, Pat?
Well, kind of. Yeah, I think so. Don't you think? Pretty much, I think, yeah.
As you could imagine, it's a small world. So we don't necessarily
know each other as well, as we do, but we know of all of the artists who are kind of out there doing it, I think.
So talk about the attraction of early music, and I want to get to Musica Matrix and what it's about in just a moment, but let's go around and Lauren Pomerantz, tell us about when you first got into early music, what the attraction was versus something other than early.
I remember being at Oberlin Conservatory of Music, and there was a group called the Collegium, and in there I sang, and that was part of maybe 40 of us who toured, and it was early music. And then I ended up in an island that had no electricity, running water, and the Balearic Islands, no plumbing, and in that whole time I felt like I was taken back in time, and I became very interested in early Spanish music as early as it could go. So that's how it eventually became that I fell in love with the Sephardic music.
Which is what you're performing on Saturday,
yes.
Is that right?
Mm-hmm. Yes, but I had earlier done Renaissance music, and I also, living in Spain, basing myself for 9 years there, I fell in love with the culture there that I heard in the villages.
So let's talk about how the others of you got attracted to this. So Shira Kamen, how did you get into early music?
Well, I played music quite young. My mother played the violin professionally in an orchestra. So I'm a classical music refugee. So I love classical music still, but I was very attracted to music where it was more chamber music, more one on a part, where it was much more creative, and where you were in smaller ensembles, and no one was telling you how to bow things.
that happened to you, I'm guessing.
That's right. But early music was a perfect combination for me of music that I would consider chamber music, music that is formal in a certain way, but I'm going to say with medieval music and the music that we're performing, there's also, I'm reluctant to use the word folky, but there's a kind of traditional music element which requires improvisation, it requires arranging, it requires a close collaboration with whoever you're working with, so that it's very different depending on who you're playing with. And that's something that's very attractive to me. So I like where the worlds meet, and you might have poetry that's very formal and very organized, but you might also have then tunes that are kind of early rockin' tunes. And I also like the musical modes, which just means pattern, the patterns of tonality that they used back then, and in a lot of contemporary music now.
How different are they from what has been considered standard in our time?
Well, that's a fine question. If you're dealing with classical music, you have a lot of a different palette of things that you're choosing from. If you are a Western musician playing traditional music of Western Europe, they'll be more familiar, the modes that you might be playing in. Or if you play jazz, with the Sephardic music, we're veering to a musical language that's a little bit farther from, I'll say, straight ahead Western European musical language, where you have things like augmented thirds, and we're not doing this, but in some cases you'll have quarter tones or different kinds of ways of approaching tonality, which is pretty fun. Plus, it's storytelling, it's ballads.
Okay, fun stuff then, for sure. Pat O'Scannell, I remember you went back and listened to our previous interview, and you actually got interested in early music when you were still in junior high school, is that right, about sixth or seventh grade?
Yeah, I mean, I was also classically trained, but on the organ, So mm-hmm. I was, in my early days, I was a church organist. And right from the beginning, I kind of leaned towards the Buxtehude and Bach side of things. And luckily, my organ instructor, who was taught at Redlands University, he said, you know, that's great. We'll let you do that. So that was the first thing. And then after that, I think when I started listening to recordings of early music, medieval music was the first thing I started listening to. I loved the timbres of the different instruments. That's what caught my imagination. And my mom was a singer, so I think the singing part of things just was sort of there organically. I never thought of it as something to pursue. I just always sang from the time I was a little kid. But the instruments were, they kind of came in succession. So, yeah, the collegium happened when I was in junior high school. Myself and Julie Jeffrey, another one of our mutual friends who's an early string player, she and I ended up being outside of the collegium room, listening to the rehearsals, and then eventually we were in the collegium. Mm-hmm. So, but yeah, it was really in junior high school, I think.
And you spent 30 years with the Oregon Shakespeare Festival, so yeah. Getting to perform stuff like this. And then was it after that you formed Musica Matrix?
Yeah, or? Yeah. Mm-hmm. It was a few years went by, kind of freelanced around the area, and then realized this was a better kind of way for me to approach what I was trying to do.
Does the use of the term matrix, does that help with school groups? I know you have an educational outreach arm. I wonder if people think they're going to go see the movie or something.
You know, I haven't had that so far, but given the way things go, I'm expecting that will come down the line. But so far, no, that has not been a problem. More than just the pronunciation and what's this all about kind of thing.
When you were talking about the church organ stuff and Bach and Buxtehude, was there a sort of a peeling back of like, there's earlier stuff than this, you know? And
oh absolutely. Yeah. In fact, some of the very first codexes of medieval music are keyboard. These quick little just these little parallel little melodies like organum or something. And I just sat in a practice room in our music department and played those through on the piano over and over again. And kind of that caught my attention too. But mostly it wasn't keyboard for me. I got into other things like recorder and early strings.
Okay, well, we'll pull the instruments out in the next segment and get to hear some of the folks from Musica Matrix and some of the material from Saturday's concert. It's called Medieval Songs of the Sephardim. The overall concept is Children of Exile. We'll explain all that in just a few moments. We'll take a short break on the Jefferson Exchange and talk more with Pat O'Scannell, Shira Kamen, and Lauren Pomerantz in a minute 10. Back on the Jefferson Exchange on the News and Information Service of Jefferson Public Radio. I'm Jeffrey Riley. Thank you for listening. We have a bit of a musical treat in the studio coming up. We're visiting with the folks from Musica Matrix. Musica Matrix is an early music ensemble in the Ashland area, started by Pat O'Scannell after she left after 30 years at the Oregon Shakespeare Festival playing lots of early music. Early music, we're talking about medieval and earlier, Shakespeare's time and before. And obviously, there's a rich field of material to choose from here. They'll be performing a concert on Saturday at the Ashland Springs Hotel called Children of Exile, Medieval Songs of the Sephardim. And we'll get into what the Sephardim are in just a moment here. So let me turn to Lauren Pomerantz and ask him, when we talk about Sephardim, what are we talking about?
We are talking about the descendants who left at the 1492, the 9th of Av, and every Jew and every Arab had to be out of Spain. And the Jews went, took the culture with them, the songs, and they went anywhere that they could go, that they wouldn't be persecuted. So they're defined as the descendants of the Iberian Peninsula of pre-1492.
So let's understand, in 1492, that was the year that the last of the Moorish kingdoms was broken up. That was the King of Granada,
yes.
Right?
Okay. Yeah,
so this is the expulsion of North African Muslims from Spain. And it sounds like from what you're saying, and I don't know the history as well as you do, but it sounds like as long as we're getting rid of the Arabs, let's get rid of the Jews too.
There had started to be pogroms in 1390 and throughout. But earlier, the Jews, Arabs, and Christians worked harmoniously together and collaborated in all the arts and sciences. And the Jews had come, they say, 1000 BCE, which they had made their home with the Phoenicians. So they had been inhabiting Spain for all that time. So they really were embedded. And when they were forced out, they took the language of Cervantes and the songs and the culture with them. And that's how they became in exile and still speak this language today.
So this is the more archaic version of Spanish than is spoken now.
Yes.
We're talking Cervantes
yes.
Spanish. Yeah.
Yes.
But it's, I can only imagine though that if you have these somewhat disparate cultures though, you've got Spanish Catholics, you've got Muslim Moors from North Africa, and you've got the Sephardic Jews. This is the potential for a great mixing and blending of cultures.
It was fabulous, the richness, and they worked to translate the ancient manuscripts into the language of that day. They worked in the arts. When you look at the old synagogues, it's filled with the Arabic artwork, and go to Cordoba. The Jews lived there, were the highest level of the physicians and statesmen. It was a very integrated culture, and that's why I became fascinated to bring forward. It's actually called the Golden Age of Spain.
All right, so we have everybody in position in the seats around a microphone for music, and actually a music stand. One of the things we've actually been able to introduce in the new facility here at JPR, we actually have music stands to give our guests, so which is great because we had the Oregon Brass Quintet a few years ago, and they all had to arrange their papers on the table and lean them up against things. So we're actually coming up in the world here. So why don't you give us a little introduction here, Lauren, and then
okay,
we'll take it away.
This is Scalarica del Oro, and it's a song that is the celebration a bride ascends the staircase of ivory and gold to take her wedding vows. And you can hear the villagers rejoicing and dancing, wishing them good luck, that although she hasn't the dowry, that she may have the greatest providence.
So here we go. Musica Matrix in the studio here at JPR.
Scalarica. Para que suba la novia a dar que duci. Venimos a ver, conseguirlo, ready, tengan mucho bien. Venimos a ver. Thank you.
Musica Matrix, based in Ashland, here in the studio, performing one of the pieces they'll be performing in a concert on Saturday at the Ashland Springs Hotel called Children of Exile, a program of Sephardic music with Shira Kamen, Pat O'Scanlon, and Lauren Pomeranz, our guests in the studio today. They're silently high-fiving each other for a piece successfully concluded. I'll bring you guys back over to the... Yeah, why don't you guys put the instruments down? We'll come back and talk more here in the studio, I'm sure. So this is a happy bridal song. Lauren, yes. Pomeranz, are there other songs with distinctly different moods to be expected in this concert?
Yes, that's one thing it's the richest repertoire. I had already gone through so much of the classical repertoire, and I kept going back and back and back in time till I hit this, and I feel it has everything, all the expressions of the greatest sorrow, and the Arabic element you'll hear in the concert, that and the unusual, as the Jews left Spain, they went to places like Turkey and Bulgaria, where the meter is then going to be 7/8 or 9/8 and not your regular 4/4.
Common time. Let's talk about the instruments then, because we didn't describe that in advance. You were playing a dulcimer.
Dulcimer that was made for me in Spain, so it has the extra frets on it, and it can do unusual modal scales.
The first time I actually understood what the Mixolydian scale was, or the Mixolydian mode, somebody played it on a dulcimer for me and made it clear. Shira Kamen, it looks like a violin, but it seems I have at least one extra peg.
It certainly does. It's the predecessor of the violin, called the VL, the great-grandmother of the violin. Unfortunately, we have none left from back then to play on. So this is a modern reproduction based on some pictures made in Rhode Island. Canton of Rhode Island. And mine has 5 strings. They're tuned in G's and D's. But the tuning is up to the player, and it really depends on what repertoires you're doing. We'll define how you might tune it. And these were pictured anywhere from 3 to 6 strings. And I play violin style because that's how I was trained, but you can also play them between the knees, on the knee, across the chest.
In my legs.
Is there just a whole realm of things that open up? I mean, once you get out of the boxes that we have put music in, I guess, since the time of Bach, I mean, it seems like there are lots of things that I can imagine a few musicians going, you can do what with that?
Right. Well, I remember the first time someone asked if I would play VL on a concert. I said, sure, what is it? And then he brought one to my house, and I said, how do you play it, up or down? He said, whatever you like. And it's not that you're just kind of playing anything at any time. You certainly, like with any repertoire, you want to learn as much as you can about these different styles and nuances. But in the end, the player is deciding how to tune the instrument, and the player is probably deciding that based on the people they're playing with and what modalities or keys they tend towards, or the repertoire. If Pat and Lauren were going to be doing everything in sort of an E flat area, I would not keep this in G's and D's. So I like that it's a very contemporary challenge for a very medieval idea.
Right. Well, yeah, as you mentioned, the G's and D's, it makes me think of people who tune their guitars in open G's and
sure.
things like that.
Or in some Appalachian fiddling, they'll have A, E, A, E, so open tunings. But there are some tunings left to us in treatises from the Middle Ages, but they're really specific. So it'll say, Jerome of Moravia says, these are your tunings for a particular area and a particular year, but it's not going to be applicable to anything else.
I was going to ask about that, but not just tunings, but notation and stuff like that. I mean, obviously you've got an intact piece here, but I mean, are you working sometimes from fragments and not modern music notation?
That's a great question, because I think, you know...
Pat, come up to the microphone a little bit.
Sorry. We're talking about the fact that, you know, a classical background, many of us, and this is sort of considered maybe a tiny slice of classical music, but it really isn't very related to classical music in most ways that we think about it. It is more related, like Shira said, to traditional music, but a way to kind of frame it in your mind as a modern person is a lot like jazz, in the sense that what you're going to see on the page is going to be the equivalent of, here's the melody of A Melancholy Baby in its simplest form with just the simple notes. That's never what you would play. Right? You hear any recording of Melancholy Baby, it would have all kinds of other notes, it would have all kinds of different things in there, because the person knew, because that's their style and their period, what to add and what was in the pocket on that. So our challenge is figuring out enough information that when we make those decisions in the moment, they're kind of informed. But I think that's what drew me, and I'm guessing probably Shira and Lauren to some degree, is that independence, that it's all on the musician. It's not about a conductor telling you something. It's not about a composer telling you this is exactly what it is. You have to do the research, and it's like being a detective, which I love.
And also setting the, I was going to say, you set the whole frame up yourself. You arrange it yourself so you can tell the story.
Lauren Pomerantz, Sheer Kamen, Pat O'Scannell, our guests in the studio. We're talking about the Musica Matrix presenting a concert of medieval songs of the Sephardim on Saturday night at 7 at the Ashland Springs Hotel. How much do we know about the composers? Are their stories lost to history, or do we have some intact pieces about the people who made the things that you're still playing today?
Sometimes we have references, but usually, as it turns out, it's not really the person involved anyway. So if you like look at Alfonso X, who's the one who was responsible for this huge bunch of songs called the Cantigas de Santa Maria, and it's attributed to him, these songs.
He's king.
He didn't write them, right? So basic, I mean, anyone else, please jump in here. But I think a lot of times what information we have is very scant on that. It's more like traditional music, where it's not about the composer, so it's rare that they actually acknowledge the composer till the Renaissance period.
Also, there were a lot of book burnings and the Sephardic language was written in Rashi, so it was very identifiable as Hebrew letters. Mm. That was one of the things.
All right, so yeah, when you're talking about pogroms and purges, this is not usually a case for preserving culture.
Well, that's why it's so fabulous that for over 500 years, these songs have been preserved by the legacy of the people, mother to child. Or
oral tradition.
Yes, the oral tradition. And then setting them back into a milieu that was medieval is the challenge. That's so fun.
I don't know about if this is so, but I think so. With both Sephardic music, certainly the stuff we're doing on this program, there aren't designated composers because this is still kind of in the realm of oral tradition. Medieval music, that's a little more formal, like polyphony, you will probably have sometimes, like Pat said, you don't really get people claiming pieces till a little bit later. But so I think most of the things we're doing are not by someone we could say, oh, that's...
So what was it that ended early music? I mean, what led to people deciding that they wanted bigger ensembles and a person in front with a piano or even a conductor?
It was a gradual thing. Definitely, if you study, which we all have music, if you study music history as we all have, it's definitely a gradual thing of orchestras getting bigger and bigger, composers wanting bigger and bigger orchestras to make their sound bigger, culminating in something like Wagner. And then the instruments, you know, that drop away as they no longer can fit into that context.
The technology changes a lot, too. If you get a clarinet that plays really loud with extra pitches, and then things get pushed up, and then... then you get the internet.
So just about a minute left. Any advice for people who've never been to a concert of early music?
Come
yes. and try it. You might be very surprised because the thing about early music is this huge umbrella. And there's so many sounds, something like the Sephardic concert to something very mannered like John Dowland. There's everything that you could possibly want within that realm if you just find what it is that you like.
Plus, the concert is early. It's at 7:30, I believe. Yes.
Before coffee.
Seven. It is
7
p.m.
Seven.
Yeah. Seven. Even earlier
come
than
at
6:30 that. Yeah.
And have hors d'oeuvres.
6:30 and hors d'oeuvres. And then the concert at 7. Okay. The concert is called Medieval Songs of the Sephardim. The overall title for the concert is Children of Exile. And it is a presentation of Musica Matrix founded by Pat O'Scannell, one of our guests here, playing with Shira Kamen and Lauren Pomerantz. Good to have you all in the studio today.
Thank you
so much for coming
for
and sharing the music with us. Okay. Saturday at 7 at the Ashland Springs Hotel.